What up, everybody? Welcome into Locked On Warriors. I'm your host, Charles T. Hamilton, going to be joined by co-host Wes Goldberg in just a minute. The Dubs finished off a tough road trip with two more losses in Minnesota and OKC, but not without its own bright spots. Going to talk about those coming up next here on Locked On Warriors on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What up, everybody? Welcome in to Locked On Warriors. Charles T. Hamilton, Wes Goldberg, joining us in just a second. As I mentioned, the Dubs lost to Minnesota in overtime and OKC to finish up that three-game road trip, which is too bad. I thought they had a shot against Minnesota. Obviously, they did and went to overtime. Just could not get it done. D'Angelo Russell looked incredible in those two games, especially against Minnesota, dropping 52. Going to talk about that in just a second. But also wanted to mention we're going to get to some of the injuries that have happened over the weekend. A couple updates. You forget about how many of these guys are injured. Now it's Eric Paschal, Amari Spellman, Draymond Green, Smiley Geach, Steph, Clay, Jacob Evans, Kevon Looney. That's eight I just counted. That's crazy. So we're going to update some of those injuries and also look forward to tonight's game against the Utah Jazz. But first, going to bring on my man, Wes Goldberg. Wes, what's up, man? I know you just finished some crazy travel days. Where are you at this moment? Are you back in California?
I am at my small apartment in San Francisco, thank God. After Houston, 17-degree weather in Minnesota, and then just whatever it is that Oklahoma is, I'm happy to be back in the city.
Yeah, small, overpriced apartment, I'm sure.
Yes, exactly.
Can you describe 17 degrees? Like, I always think I'd do good in cold weather, but I've never been under, like, 30. So, like, is it that much worse once you get, you know, down low to, like, 17?
No, your boy's from Florida, so I own, like, two jackets, and I wore both of them.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. I was shocked. Like, literally just speechless. I left the airport. When I got out of the airport in Minnesota to call my Uber, I walked outside to the little space where everybody has to wait for the Ubers. I take two steps outside and I turn around. I go right back inside. I'm like, I'll wait indoors. This is insane.
Yeah.
I texted a friend of mine. I'm like, it's so cold that they actually grow Christmas trees outside here. This is where they come from.
They get them shipped into Florida. They don't grow them out.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So you were obviously, I mean, you're at every game, but you were at the Minnesota game where D'Angelo Russell dropped 52 in overtime, which was a tough loss, I'd say. Again, I know the losses, there's a silver lining to each loss, but man, when you have D'Lo going off like that, it would have been nice for them to get that win, but you know, this team is a little short, but we got the, what's the word, the underlying storyline of him and Karl Anthony Towns in Minnesota and stuff and blah, blah, blah. But there were some fun moments where he's, you know, knocking down buckets, kind of talking a little trash to his friend Karl Anthony Towns, which it's all love. But those are some of my favorite scenes when, you know, you get two guys going at it like that.
Yeah, and, you know, I've been accused of being a little biased in favor of D'Angelo Russell because I was a big fan of him in Brooklyn because he would go off for games like this. I was in Sacramento last year. Before I got the beat job, I was up in Sacramento last year when he went off for like 40 points.
When they were down like 30?
When they were down 30 and he just like came back and just single-handedly won that game with all these like pull-up jumpers and crazy dribble moves and, you know, this weird in-and-out type of game that he has. And that's what the Warriors saw the last two games, really. I mean, last three games. I mean, he scored 30 points against the Spurs. He missed three games with a tweaked ankle, comes back and scores 52 in Minnesota, and then follows that up with a 32-point performance against the Thunder next game. But, you know, they lose those games, sure. But as we've discussed on this show several times already, that's not really the point. I'll say this, though. That Minnesota game, that would have been nice to get the win there, mm-hmm. because you don't want to waste a 52 performance. You just don't. And for D'Angelo Russell, it's his first 50 game of his career. You don't ever want that to come in a loss. And I think the Warriors really could have used that win, given especially that they ended up going over three on the road trip.
Yeah. And it's like Steph's 54 at the Garden. The underlying thing, well, they lost that game. You know, like
right.
It's great to talk about, but in the end, they ended up losing that game. So it would have been nice for them to get the win. But I'm with you on D'Angelo Russell, man. I've been so impressed this season. Last season, obviously, was a great storyline as well. But one of the things that I, you know, speaking too soon, obviously, because we haven't seen the whole group together, obviously, it would be the best outcome if it works with D'Angelo Russell and Steph and Clay and Draymond and you don't end up moving him. But it just seems like his game is so suited for the high usage, high pick and roll, ball in his hands all the time. And again, we'll see if it works out with the other guys. And I've been incredibly impressed, and that's not a knock on him. For some reason, when we say high usage, people think it's a knock. It's not when you can do what he can do. It's just it's tough for me to see it all meshing together when all four are healthy.
Well, the interesting thing that I've been noticing is that when D'Angelo's on the court, it is high usage. I mean, he ran 26 pick and rolls against the Thunder, which is an insane amount. He's a quote unquote high usage player. He ran between 11 and 12 per game for Brooklyn last year. So the more than double that in a single game is crazy. But that reflects where the Warriors are. It's D'Angelo Russell is the offense, and at other times it's Alec Burks, who's been pretty nice the last three games. But, when D'Angelo is on the bench, suddenly the whole thing shifts back to what we're used to seeing from the Warriors, right? Because they don't have a dominant ball handler. They don't have a guy who can create the way that D'Angelo Russell can create when he's on the bench. So all of a sudden it goes back to this whirring motion of ball screens and passes and dribble handoffs and drives and kicks and all these things. And I think that's ultimately where the balance will come in. I think D'Angelo will get eventually, if he's a long-term fit, he'll get more and more comfortable playing next to Steph, but I don't think he'll ever fully be comfortable. I think that the peak version of this will probably look like D'Angelo Russell handling the ball a lot when Steph is on the court, with Steph playing off the ball, because Steph can thrive in that situation.
Yeah,
we know that.
Yeah.
And then you stagger their minutes as such where Russell can continue playing that way. And then when he's on the bench, Steph is in the game running the offense the way Steph typically likes to run the offense, which is also a lot of times just Draymond bringing the ball up too. So,
yeah.
Steph Curry likes to play off the ball. D'Angelo Russell likes playing on the ball. I think it could work. Call me crazy. It just might not look the way it used to look for so many years when it was, you know, before Kevin Durant, when it was just Steph, Clay, and Draymond.
Definitely. Well, I also heard some, I hate to say basketball nerds or hipsters or whatever, bashing D'Angelo Russell before this. And, you know, if you like him, you like him. If you don't, you don't. That's fine. But opinion should change because he's been incredible, at least these last three games. Like you talked about going back to the Spurs. And one of the knocks on him, which I have to give him credit, that's the other thing. You can knock a player, but when they improve, I'd like you to acknowledge it, because one of the knocks was his free throw rate, his free throw attempts and free throw rate. From last year, 2.5 a game, he's up to 6 a game now. And it's not just in the numbers. You can see it during the game that he's getting to the line. And then as far as free throw rate goes, he's up above 30% now, where he was at 13% last year. So that is a huge improvement that is just obvious, too. Like, he heard the criticism, and he's kind of got some – I wouldn't be surprised if he even mentioned that he studied some James Harden, because there's some of those Harden moves in the lane, and he's getting to the line.
That's the definition of efficiency, is getting to the line more than he was last year. He still takes a lot of mid-range shots,
yeah.
But he takes them really – they kind of come in the flow of a heat check, right? He's not really going to start things with a mid-range shot. When he's scoring 52 points and 30-plus points, a lot of those are going to be mid-range shots, because they're going to have to be, because defenses give them to him. A lot of times defenses want to clog the lane. They want to run people off the three-point line. The mid-range shot is there, and he's been able to make that shot. But it's not as much as it was in the past for him, at least in this small sample size that we're talking about here. He is pulling up from three-point range more than ever. He took like 17 threes the other night. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, there is – I think the James Harden thing is a really good – that's a really good comparison. There is a lot of his game there, which is not bad. Right? Like, James Harden – is James Harden, because he's such a great isolation player, but another layer to why James Harden has been finished top three in the MVP race three of the last 4 years or whatever it was, is because he's so efficient with his shot chart. And I think if you're any player, you can adopt that kind of mindset and improve your game.
Oh, definitely. And I, you know, not to make the, well, whatever, the comparison's obvious. Yeah, it's the James Harden comparison. They're both so smooth at their own pace, never out of control or anything. Like we talked about Jordan Poole, he just seems out of control all the time, going too fast, where D'Angelo Russell, James Harden, they're smooth at their own pace. And I don't know if there are coaches out there that look at it as like, I would love to run that similar to Houston offense. But if there are, I mean, D'Angelo Russell would be top of my list after James Harden as far as someone you'd want to be running that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a template already put in place for that. It's James Harden. Before it was James Harden, it was really LeBron James.
Yeah.
Right? And that template works, but you have to be okay with a slower pace, with a poking and prodding and meticulous style of offense that isn't that aesthetically pleasing unless you have a guy who could do it the way that those guys could do it. I think D'Angelo Russell has made some really creative passes too, which is as important as just the scoring, is being able to find teammates and make those passes. There's been a few of them that have been really, really impressive. So yeah, the template is set. Again, I think it still goes against the grain of everything Steve Kerr wants to do.
Oh, yeah.
We know that there will be an adjustment period at some point. There will be a come to Jesus moment where both of them sort of have to find a middle ground. I think Steve is going to have to be okay running D'Angelo Russell 10 pick and rolls a game. And I think D'Angelo Russell is going to have to be okay figuring out how to exist in a little bit more of a motion scheme. But what marks a great coach is being able to adjust to his players.
Exactly.
And not necessarily vice versa.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. One last thing I wanted to mention. I mean, obviously, I'm just very impressed with D'Angelo Russell, and we'll see what the future holds for him in the Warriors. But I got to mention Alec Burks, who still is looking good. Had, 18 against Minnesota, I think, and 23 against OKC. Maybe flip those. I might be getting those mixed up. But either way, the guy's at around 20 points a game and is playing really well for this, you know, 2-8 team, but also I just have to imagine is really showcasing himself to other teams across the league. And I've mentioned it almost every podcast, but to me, that is his value at this point, is the fact that he's playing well and looks like he could be valuable on the trade market.
Yeah, for his long-term value is definitely that. And remember, he can't be traded until the second half of December, right?
Yeah.
December 15th is the day that he could be traded. So the short-term value for Alec Burks is that he keeps the offense afloat, especially in those minutes where D'Angelo Russell's not playing. That's really important for a team that, as we're talking, has the worst record in the NBA. tanking adjacent, whatever. They don't want to have the worst record in the NBA. If they're going to tank, they'd rather maybe pick 4 or 5. They don't want to be picking number one. It's embarrassing. If you get the fourth or fifth slot and you win the lottery, then great. But this is a team that probably needs a win pretty soon here, and Alec Burks can help them do that, especially coming off the bench. He had to start against the Thunder because Eric Paschal was a late scratch in that game. Injury doesn't seem that serious, but he was a late scratch in that game. So he started, and I think the bench really suffered in that game because of it. So bringing him back off the bench when everybody is healthy-ish has been a real value for them.
Yeah, and, you know, that's why I mentioned the Minnesota game. It would have been such a nice game to win because you had the opportunity to do so, and there's going to be a lot of losses along the way. Like, you know, you don't have to worry much about, oh, if they get this win, then, you know, a lottery odds, blah, blah, blah. There's going to be plenty of opportunities for L's, but the wins that they can scrap together, you know, it helps morale, especially with some of these young kids. But, oh, well, they did end up losing that one, and they have Utah tonight. They had some injury. You just mentioned Eric Paschal. They had some injuries during their last game as well. We're going to talk about those and maybe what the future holds for a couple players in just a minute. So before the OKC game, we got the news that Eric Paschal was going to be a scratch right before the OKC game. It was pretty late. Amari Spellman also tweaked his ankle during that game as well. So both the Nova guys ended up out of that one. And then, you know, we'll get to Draymond Green in a second, but you mentioned Pascal earlier that it didn't seem serious. Do you think we might be able to see him play against Utah tonight?
He'll be playing against Utah. I mean, barring something crazy, he'll be playing. So what actually happened with Pascal is it was kind of a rookie mistake. So they didn't have shoot around the morning of the Oklahoma City Thunder game. And so, you know, Kerr let them sleep in basically and said, you know what, it's second night of back to back, no shoot around, get some sleep, go out, play the Thunder. But because there was no shoot around, there was no morning meeting either. And that in the morning meeting, players are typically allowed an opportunity there to talk about how they're feeling, you know, physically, you know, who's beaten and bruised up, who might need a day, like whatever, you know, you get a status update. Well, because there was no morning meeting, Pascal didn't know what to do. So he showed up, you know, before the game and 45 minutes before the game told Kerr, hey, I've got like this weird bruise thing. So the trainers worked on him for a few minutes and said, you know what, it's not loosening him up. Best not to risk this because, again, second night of a back-to-back.
There's
certain games on the schedule you just look at and you're like, look, this might just be a scheduled loss. And second night of a back-to-back on the road is one of those kind of games, especially when you only have eight players. So I think they were cautious. They decided to sit Eric out, and that was that. So normally what a veteran would do in that situation, by the way, is because there's no morning meeting, text your trainer, text your assistant coach that you're tight with, or even just text Steve Kerr and just be like, look, this I'm bothering this. Can I come in early to try to work on it? I come into the arena early. Let's try to work it out. Or what do you think? Like, just give him a heads up. But Steve Kerr didn't even know when he was talking with us. He was talking to media an hour before tip-off. He had no idea that Eric Pascal was bothered by anything at all. He literally talked to us, walked into the locker room, and then Pascal was like, yo, my thigh is kind of whack right now. And he was like, okay, well, you're not playing then. So that was basically it. So rookie mistake by Eric Pascal, kind of funny.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure he'll be playing against Utah because it's going to be a big matchup for him.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, I mean, just rookie learning the routine. Any word on Spellman as far as I think he tweaked an ankle during the OKC game that caused him to miss most of the second half, how serious that's looking?
So after the game, I was talking with some people. Initially, it's not a major concern. Again, cautionary type of thing. He tweaks his ankle in the first half. Don't want to ruin him. However, it is one of those type of things with an ankle that could get worse. Overnight, it could actually swell and inflame, and that's bad. I mean, that's literally what happened to D'Angelo Russell. He tweaked his ankle, like I think it was in that Spurs game, and then and he played the rest of the game, scored 30 points in that game, and then overnight it inflamed, and he had to sit out for three games. So still no word on how serious it is with Omari Spellman.
And then Draymond Green, we knew he was going to be out for the road trip. Any idea that he might be playing tonight or, you know, most likely still a couple more games until he's back to maybe not 100%, but a playing percentage?
Yeah, well, we're recording this on a Sunday evening. He's going to be reevaluated Monday morning, so we should know more.
Gotcha.
Like, by the time people are listening to this, they'll probably know more than we do.
And then so many injuries and so many different timelines. Off the top of your head, do you know Looney and Jacob Evans? When are they being reevaluated again? I think Looney, it's like November 14th or something like that. And then Evans, maybe a week after that.
Yep. Evans could even be that same week as Looney. It wouldn't surprise me if everybody was in that one week. But there is, when as far as evaluations go, like it is simply just to reevaluate. I don't think that they're, and set a timetable from there. So I wouldn't expect either of them back at that by mid-November. I think it's going to be a little bit longer than that.
Gotcha. And last one, we kind of have to address it just because it did come out, and I found it pretty ridiculous, but would love to get your opinion on it. The one rumor that came out that the Warriors expected Steph to miss the entire year. I mean, did you hear anything other than that just one random report? I know Steve Kerr shot it down heavily, but, you know, was there any rumbling outside of the one report we heard?
Well, as soon as I saw that report, I talked to some people in the Warriors, and they basically said they literally said it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
They're like, this is ridiculous. There's no way that this could possibly be true. how could this reporter know more than anybody else? What source is he talking to? Because everybody has been on the same page, which is basically Steph Curry will be reevaluated in 3 months, and at that point, we will know something more than what we know now. So there's nobody in the organization that knows more than anybody else. Everybody was just waiting for that 3 month time period, right? We all know the same thing. We all know exactly what the organization knows. It was one of the it was the metacarpal in his left hand, and he's going to be reevaluated in 3 months. And so when that report came out, you know, everybody that I talked to shot it down. A few hours later, Steve Kerr came out and shot it down. And it's not a coincidence that the reporter who wrote the story later clarified in a tweet saying it wouldn't be because of health. He's basically just speculating that if the Warriors are completely out of it by the time Steph Curry is healthy, that he might not play at all. But even that, I don't think is true because, and I still say the same thing with Klay Thompson. At some point, there's value in just saying, look, congratulate those guys on a rehab well done and get them on the court, because these guys wouldn't have been playing basketball for a very, very long time. And just to get them out there is just a good morale boost, especially considering that they would have to take off the entire summer and not play until the next season. Mm. So just to get them out on the court and sort of see what this thing looks like too, just to get a couple of test runs of what this team looks like with D'Angelo Russell fully healthy would be good. Just so you know what you're doing going into the summer.
Yeah, and 5, 10, 15 games at the end of the year is, you know, 15 less games to knock the rust off at the beginning of the next season. So I'm with you. I thought it was a ridiculous report, but I did think we had to at least mention it. Dubs are taking on the Utah Jazz tonight. Going to preview that game in just a minute. So after a three-game road trip in which the Dubs sadly went 0-3, there were still some positives. They could have pulled out that Minnesota game, but Minnesota has some tough vets. That's kind of part of what the Warriors are missing on this. Well, the Warriors are missing a lot on this team, let's be honest. But, you know, the veteran presence, you can't mistake on Minnesota. And I know we've both talked about the whole Robert Covington thing for D'Angelo Russell is ridiculous. But Covington did show, you know, just the veteran presence towards the end of that game that helped Minnesota get the win. Now I'm just going off on random stuff. Anyways, taking on the Jazz tonight, a team with a ton of veterans. Where are you at coming into a game like this with this team? I'm coming in just like, hey, let's see who can play well, you know, and that's about it. Very, very few expectations for me going into a game against one of the top teams in the Western Conference. What about you?
Yeah, Utah's 6-3 at the time of us recording this, and they will be going into the game, and they have the second best defense in the league behind the Lakers, and that was to be expected. I mean, Utah's defense is stout, and it's led by a guy named Rudy Gobert, who is probably the best defensive center. No, is the best defensive center in the NBA. Well, probably. You could throw Joel Embiid in that conversation, but it's probably Gobert. And it's going to be really interesting. At least what I'm watching for is, all right, the whole point of this D'Angelo Russell high screen and roll that we were talking about at the top of the show is to get switches oftentimes and create bad matchups and put opposing centers in bad situations. And it'll be interesting to see how D'Angelo does that against a guy like Gobert, because Gobert is so stout defensively, because he's so long and such a smart and savvy defender. This is not going to be going against Karl Anthony Towns, who is not great defensively. It's not going to be like going against Steven Adams, who is a good rebounder and a good rim protector, but not the most switchable defender. So that at least is what I'm watching for. And again, you're going against the second-best defense in the league. If you're the Warriors, you have the worst defense in the league. So defensively, you're just going to have to step up and try to get to par somehow, or just try to blow this game open and make it a shootout. And that's, again, asking for a lot when you're going up against the second-best defense in the league.
Yeah, no, that's true. And they also have some offensive firepower as well, led by a guy in Donovan Mitchell, who you have a piece coming out about him and a current Dub. It's one of my favorite topics just in the NBA. I don't know why we can't get enough of some of the behind the scenes stuff, but basically friendships across the league. And you have a piece coming out. You wanted to give us a little taste of what the beak, what do you have coming out about Donovan Mitchell and one of his closest friends in the world?
So they both grew up in the same neighborhood, Dobbs Ferry, New York. It's about, I don't know, 20 miles north of Harlem, 30 miles north of Brooklyn, just south of basically what's considered upstate New York. A little quiet town that doesn't have a lot of just anybody coming out of it. There's no, it's just a small town. And so for two stud NBA players to come out of that town and literally grow up right next door to each other, that's how they knew each other. They just were next door neighbors. And for two neighbors in this one small town to grow up and become NBA players, it's pretty remarkable. And they've played AAU ball. They've won a couple of national championships in AAU, during their teenage years. And of course, Donovan Mitchell goes to Louisville. Eric Paschal goes to Fordham and transfers to Villanova, but they've been tight, you know, their entire lives and really, really competitive with each other and competitive when they play with each other. So to go now toe to toe in their first NBA game ever playing against each other, it's going to be really exciting. And it's a really big moment for both of them. I know I've talked to Paschal quite a bit about it, and he's amped. Like, he can't wait. And I think this is one of the reasons why the Warriors did ultimately decide to sit him out against the Thunder, was because they knew that they, in a season that is going the way it is, you got to give your guys some wins here. Like, and morale boosts are very, very important to the overall season. And so he's going to be ready for this game. I know he's going to be really competitive. He's going to want to beat Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell is going to be the same way. And they don't play the same position, but there are going to be situations where, and I even asked Paschal this. I was like, look, I know you guys don't play, like, you guys aren't going to be guarding each other in half court sets, but are you going to like force the switch if it's even close to you? Because you can do that. You can just scream it. You can wave your guys off and they will let you take them. And he's like, yes, I'm going to do that. I'm the best defender on the team against them because I know how exact, I know all of his moves. I know how he wants to play. So I'm really excited to watch that, but it was been really cool talking to him. And then I also talked to Paschal's dad about that relationship. And so all of this is going to be my story on the Mercury News Monday morning, but really, really interesting how they grew up. Actually, Donovan Mitchell was at the draft party for Eric Paschal. And I thought that, you know, for him to go all the way out there in the middle of his summer to be there with him and his family was pretty cool.
Yeah, no question. There's a video out there of him making a little speech at the draft party. It's, like I said, I'm a sap for this kind of stuff. So I'm excited to read it, man. Excited for the game, too. And we all know if you've played competitive sports against some of your friends, that's who you go hardest against. You know, it's all love after the game, but I'm coming for your head when we go up against each other. So excited for the game. Excited for that article, man. We will talk after the game. Give a little breakdown, hopefully a competitive win for the Warriors, but, you know, we will see. But we'll definitely talk to you after on Locked On Warriors on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on the Golden State Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.